This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and Bradley and his family have all been sick this week, so I have a special guest with me tonight. Before I get into that, let me tell you about three sponsors for the show. You know them already, but they're good friends of the show, and we'd like to tell you about them again. They are Jam Software, the makers of the Casper Suite, great MDM tool that powers widespread use of Apple technologies all throughout education. Shobi, an iPad app for paperless classrooms, which Shobi makes it really easy to collect, assign, and review student work that your classmate do for you and submit to you electronically. And finally, Squarespace. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. For free trial and 10% off, visit squarespace.com/outofschool and enter the code PUPIL at checkout. A better web starts with your website. Now, I'll not introduce too much about the guest tonight, but it's Tim Lauer, principal of the Meriwether Lewis Elementary School in Portland, Oregon. And I'd just like to run the episode for you now. This is the interview I recorded with Tim earlier today. Okay, so Tim, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time. Can I just ask you to start by introducing yourself to the listeners and also introduce your school?
You bet. Tim Lauer. I'm an elementary school principal in Portland, Oregon, in the United States of America. And I have been in this position for, this is my 12th year at Lewis. And we're a kindergarten through fifth grade, basically ages 5 through 10, bumping up into 11 sometimes, elementary school. And so we're about 385 students. We are basically, we're in a neighborhood. We do have some kids that transfer in from adjoining attendance areas and such, but we're a pretty typical elementary school.
Okay, and you're based in the city limits of Portland, is that right?
Yes, in Portland proper. We're part of Portland Public Schools, which is about 48,000 students total.
Okay, good stuff. And in terms of the kind of demographics of who comes to your school, can you describe the sort of social profile in the area?
Sure. In the States, there's a kind of a determiner called if a student qualifies for free or reduced priced meals at school, like breakfast or lunch.
Okay.
So roughly about 39% of our students qualify for that in one manner or another.
Okay.
In terms of demographics, we're about 70%, white kids, and then 30% are kids of within that 30%, we have kids of Mexican American descent, Central American, Vietnamese, Chinese, Russian. Like I said, and that pretty much mimics Portland or mirrors Portland a little bit in terms of its demographics and such.
Okay, that's great. So one of the things, Tim, that we've been talking about a little bit recently on the show is school leadership, and that was one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the show is because I feel personally, and I don't know how you feel about it, but it's something that I think is increasingly necessary in a time of change, is that clear leadership. And I don't know if you've seen similar things in schools, you know, around about your area and different things, that when it comes to change, and we're going to talk about technology in a little minute, but can you describe your sort of approach to school leadership?
Yeah, I look at my role as being that of someone who can get my staff the things they need, or my families and my students the things they need, a facilitation kind of role. I think the most important part of my job is hiring really good people, and I've been fortunate. I've been here a while, so I actually have been able to I think only two members of the staff were here before I got here. And so that I look at that role as of when you hire people, you're making a commitment to them and to the organization and the school. And so to me, I take that very seriously and actively recruiting and trying to find the best people I can. And then knowing that I've hired good people who kind of share our vision and that type of thing, then you can basically focus on other things because you brought in good people. So, like I said, I think that's the most important aspect of my job is making sure that I bring a staff in that reflects our values and also is going to be someone who really is committed to student learning and growth. In terms of the facilitation aspect of things, it's the kind of things where teachers will come to me with suggestions or ideas, and I'll do my best to try to find avenues to achieve those things, be it grant money, be it things from our budget, that type of thing. I'd say I'm a bit hands-off. I like to visit rooms every day. I'm out of my office the vast majority of the day. The office is basically where I spend some time in the early morning and spend time in the afternoon after school. But for the most part, I try to be out visiting classrooms and interacting with my staff and my students.
That's great. So one of the questions I had in the show notes for you, Tim, was to ask you to kind of describe your personal education philosophy. Now, you referred there to trying to hire people who share the values that you're looking for in the school. Can you describe what those values are and how you would identify those in somebody you were going to try and hire?
Yeah. There's a couple veins to this. One is in the area of the arts. We have a very strong music program. Tony Jamesbury is our music teacher, and he's here full time. And starting at third grade, our kids have opportunities to not only have their regular music instruction, but also orchestra, band, strings, and recorder club. And then he has an ORF ensemble, which is a lot of percussion, movement, rhythm, that type of thing.
Okay.
And so that's something that was there when I got here. That was kind of a constant in the organization here. Also, just visual art itself. And so that's something that over the years that I've been here and even before that has been something that has been valued by the staff and the community. And so we have a commitment in terms of giving our students opportunities with music and visual art. The other aspect of that is more of an inclusive kind of environment. We have traditionally in the States, there had been a tendency where you would students who maybe had some kind of disability would be separated out from the normal school population. And that's changed over the last 20, 25 years, but it's changed even more in the sense of within our program, you'll see students with various types of disabilities, Down syndrome, autism, cerebral palsy, those types of things. And those students are included in part of the regular classroom environment. So that I would say those areas in terms of value and inclusion and seeing the benefit and the right of that for all students to partake in the program. And then also, access to the arts we think are very important. And then one other aspect of this that as the world around us changes in terms of technology and that type of thing, a commitment to understanding and utilizing technology for instruction and as a way to help students kind of reach their potential. And again, with the inclusive aspect of things, students with disabilities, the technology has been a huge benefit in terms of adaptive types of devices and such. So I'd say, when we're interviewing and we're advertising for folks, those are areas that we hit in our discussion with the person. And, we strive to hire people that kind of match that.
That's really interesting because it's something that I think when you hear a lot of schools that are people hear about schools that are going, one-to-one or high levels of technology integration, they often assume that they're STEM schools or technology-focused schools or some such. And just like your school, Tim, Cedars is very similar to that, we're not heavily a science and technology school, although we do teach those subjects. But again, drama and music and arts are our big focuses around in our school as well. So it's interesting to hear you say that. Let me take a moment and tell you about Jam Software. And Jam Software provide IT staff with these enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies, such as Macs, iPads, iPhone, and Apple TV in education. And now with Casper Focus, they've placed these great technologies right into the hands of teachers who work with students every day. Casper Focus is an iPad and iPhone app that lets teachers quickly gain students' attention, conduct secure exams within an app, and select specific Apple TVs assigned to their class. You can also choose and distribute iBooks and even start AirPlay right from Casper Focus. You can learn what else you can do with Casper Focus at jamfsoftware.com. That's J-A-M-F software.com. And thanks to Jamf for sponsoring this episode of Out of School. So you've mentioned some of the technology approaches, and one of the things that I found very interesting about your school was that you use Chromebook down to quite early years. And that's something that I've observed in, you know, my travels in the US and talking to colleagues over there, that it seems to me that more often people are using iPad in early years and maybe even into middle school, and then later some kind of laptop, you know, Chromebook or micro Windows laptop. Can you talk to me a little bit about how younger children use a laptop form factor?
Sure. Basically, from third, fourth, and fifth grade, are one-to-one with Chromebooks.
Okay.
Two of our third, we have another set ordered. It's not here yet, but we will be within a month at third grade. The two third grade classrooms share a cart. They're next door to each other, so they share it back and forth parts of the day. I have a mixed age classroom, which is second and third grade, and they have a cart, and they're one-to-one in that classroom too. And so, for example, in third grade, the teachers, I think, have done a really interesting job in terms of taking advantage of Google Apps because of the whole aspect of pushing content. There's another piece that we have with our Google Apps environment, which I think is really helpful for us. It's called Teacher Dashboard, or HAPARA. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
I know of it, yeah.
Yeah, and so basically that's an environment that allows the teacher to push documents easily out to students, be able to kind of everything the student creates is shared with the teacher, so he or she can kind of jump in, add comments and suggestions in terms of peer editing and that type of thing. Okay. And so that's really helpful. So like in third grade, Ms. Kennedy's classroom and Ms. Alyssa's classrooms, they have started, they used to do some morning work that was all kind of paper driven in terms of some, maybe they're writing on a prompt, or they're kind of answering some questions, kind of a start of the day activity. And they used to do that traditionally with paper. And because of they have the Chromebooks now, Ms. Kennedy's pushing that out to them every morning. So basically they open up their drive and it says, you know, Tuesday's work or whatever. And so each child has a copy of that. They can work and obviously edit and write on that document. And then she has, you know, basically instant access to that. And whereas traditionally this was done in little notebooks and things that were stacked in a bin, and then, you know, the teacher would take the bin over to the table and open up individual books, and it was, you know, it was very much a batch process. And yeah. I think what the technology affords you is the ability to kind of just kind of chime in or jump in as the opportunities arise. The other aspect of this is using the teacher dashboard, the HAPARA tool, is that as she notices students are having, maybe there's a common thread that's coming up, a common, you know, not so much mistake, but common, maybe an area where they need further clarification, you know, she's observing that, and then she can actually just kind of chime in with everybody. HAPARA has some interesting tools where you can send class messages or individual messages out to students, and she'll remind them of things such as, you know, conventions in their writing and that type of thing. It's a really interesting environment in terms of being able to kind of manage the technology. We have iPads with our, I'd say, with our K and one students for the most part. And those were kind of legacy from a grant that we received. I mean, they're iPad 1s. They're still running, but they're obviously they're limited in some of the stuff that they can do. But for a lot of the interaction with our younger students, it works pretty well. I mean, you know, we've got some apps that we push out to kids and that type of thing. But for me, when we started looking more closely, you know, as we acquired some funds, we kind of had a conversation in the building about what Google would allow you to do in terms of cost, but also in management. Because for the most part, you know, pushing apps and pushing tabs and things out in the Chrome environment is really pretty simple. And in terms of supporting the students and the teachers in the building, we don't have a tech person on staff. Okay. It's basically me and then Mr. Janesberry, our music teacher. He helps me with that too. But being able to have a teacher say, hey, I would like, when my kids open up their Chromebook, I would like these three tabs to show up. I can do that within a second or two, and then it's out there. And it makes that process a lot easier.
Yeah, that's it feels like a common theme that's coming through right now is that for schools that are in that kind of same situation as you are, Tim, to maybe not necessarily having tech staff on site. As you know, I'm Cedars is fortunate that I'm kind of there and I do that stuff at the same time as teaching. But for people who don't, Chromebook seems to be a very compelling way to go with that as well. So it's interesting to hear you say that. So you would say that, if just to understand the kind of structure overall, Hapara is kind of the hub of everything that you're doing, and the kids are spending most of their time in Google Docs.
And it's interesting because this is our third year using the Hapara tool, and I think it was we got the Chromebooks, we did them with fifth grade to start with, and the teachers liked it. They thought it was cool. But the whole aspect of the management of the docs was a problem in terms of making sure a student shared the work with you and that type of thing. And Hapara kind of strips that away. And once we purchased Hapara, I saw the use of by the instructional use just skyrocket in terms of the teachers felt much more comfortable. There's also, you know, there's a aspect of it too in terms of management that we don't really stress it that much, but we do let the kids know that, you know, I mean, I can see what tabs you've got open. I can, you know, so if for some reason, if a student isn't exactly where he or she needs to be, a little message could pop up from the teacher or from me if I happen to be peeking in, and I'll do that occasionally. But for the most part, we try to use those features to kind of just reinforce, you know, good practice and the good things they're doing.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Now, you said that as you migrated towards Hapara, you saw the instructional use of docs going through the roof. Did you do anything specific with the staff to make that happen, or even just to bring them from a sort of non-technology education into the world of, you know, Chromebooks and then into Hapara? Well, how did you transition the people who were there?
It was, you know, there's an element of docs that I think the whole collaborative nature that, you know, documents can be in this environment is new for a lot of our staff. I mean, it was new for a lot of our staff. And so I think, getting an understanding of the power of that, and also, you know, it can be a really interesting thing where basically if a student's working on an essay, her classroom teacher could be, you know, adding comments, but also maybe if it's a English language learning student, that teacher can be popping in. If it's a special education student, that support teacher can also be chiming in. So trying to express that to staff and show them that you know, we could do that before Hapara, but you had to specifically share that doc with each of those individuals. Whereas in this environment, it's basically you know, those people that need to have access to those students, and they can easily just jump in. I think the other aspect of it was there was a bit of the management piece for some of the teachers they were a little worried about, and just rolling out Google Apps by itself without the shell or the piece of Hapara. When we added that piece, I think a lot of their fears went away because basically I think teachers sometimes fear that if there's a procedural process you have to go through to make sure all kids are doing something, someone's going to forget or someone's not going to do it. And then all the affordances that the technology brings you, well, now William forgot to share that document with me, so now on Monday I got to go make sure he shares that document with me. In the Hapara environment, that kind of strips that away. So they just have access to it.
Yeah, I suppose it's that fear of, you know, it's bad enough chasing up homework as it is without having to chase up digital sharing and access as well.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. So in terms of the students' involvement with, you know, their technology experience and their education experience, do you do anything specific to identify certain students as, you know, the phrase like digital leaders or whatever, or something, geniuses are used in an Apple Center school and that kind of thing? Do you do anything like that?
We do. It's not real formalized, but it's more ad hoc. It's the kind of thing, like I recall about a week or two ago, I walked into a third grade room and this little guy, Channing, was he was showing me his writing. He had written quite a bit on this little particular piece. And I said to him, I said, how many words do you think you wrote? And he goes, well, I don't know. And I said, well, let me show you something. So I show him the tools where you can do the word count. Mm-hmm. And he just thought that was the neatest thing ever. And then I turn around and he's talking to two other kids and showing them the same thing. And then the next day I walk in and everybody knows how to do that because, you know, the kids discover something or find something, they're really pretty good. And we try to do that a lot in terms of, hey, go ask Lucy over there because she knows how to do that, and she'll show you how to do that. I was in Mr. Hansen's room a couple weeks ago, and there was some word that as they were, and it was a term from a, I think, a book or a novel they were reading, and the term kept, you know, in Google Docs kept coming up with a red line under it that it was a, you know, a word that the dictionary didn't know. And so he was, you know, casting his tab up on the projector, and somebody mentioned that, well, that word's red, it means it's wrong. And then he explained, no, we spelled it right. We've got it written over there on the chart. It's just Google doesn't know that word. And then some other kid says, well, why don't you just add it to your personal dictionary? And he says, well, why don't you show us how to do that? And so she says, well, you control click and do this, and then boom. And all of a sudden, now everybody knows how to do that. And there are those kinds of things that aren't really formalized, but they're more ad hoc. I think if I had time, I there's some things you obviously some basics that you want to get through to them, but I think this other aspect of letting them kind of do it organically can be pretty powerful too.
Yeah, and I don't know if you find this. I've certainly found this that putting that knowledge into the heads of students takes it around the school.
Yes,
you know, as they go into other classrooms and teachers who maybe haven't thought about that or haven't decided to use it yet, that knowledge goes with the children to the other classes, and that's how it gets spread around as well.
Mm-hmm. No, I've noticed that too.
This episode of Out of School is also brought to you by Shobi. Shobi is an iPad app for paperless classrooms. With Shobi, teachers can quickly and easily assign, collect, and review student work on their iPads and then provide rich feedback to students by adding annotations, text notes, and voice notes directly into documents. Students can show their learning creatively by submitting to Shobi from thousands of compatible iPad apps or by completing assignments with Shobi's built-in tools. Shobi keeps everyone organized with individual student assignment folders, email, and push notifications. Now, Shobi Basic is completely free, and teachers can try it out with their students in just a few minutes. Get started by downloading Shobi on the App Store or visiting shobi.com. And Shobi are also offering a special deal for school admins listening to this show. Buy Shobi Pro for 5-year teachers, and they'll upgrade an extra 5 teachers to Shobi Pro for free. That's 10 teachers, all their students, on Shobi Pro for a full year. Visit shobi.com/outofschool for details. Thanks to Shobi for sponsoring this episode. Let me change gears a little bit, Tim. And one of the main reasons I kind of connected with you in the first place was through Instagram. And as you know, we use Instagram personally, and you certainly use it personally as well. But one of the things I found very interesting about your feed was that you used Instagram to share a lot of kind of glimpses and views of life around the school and things that children are doing and events that are happening at the school. Is that part of a sort of deliberate strategy, or is that just something that's kind of grown up organically?
I'd say it's a bit deliberate, but it was organic in how it came about. I mean, I've been probably publishing content on the web for 20 years. I mean, okay. I 93, 94 was, I think 94, we actually had a web server at our old school and that type of thing. And we started, and to me, the power of that was this aspect of, you know, being able to publish and tell your story, so to speak. And I recall going to a workshop that was, this was when Mosaic was kind of coming into play. If your listeners want to go Google all that and look up on Wikipedia. But basically the idea of, you know, the promise of the internet was that you're going to bring all this stuff to your classroom, to your school. Mm-hmm. And then I went to a workshop, and there was a high school teacher from Denver, Colorado, who was talking about Gopher, of all things. Okay. But he was talking about students writing and sharing their work with others. And that, to me, kind of flipped a switch and said, wow, that makes sense. That's pretty powerful. And so in terms of access to blogs and different things like that, you know, Twitter, Instagram, I look at those as tools to kind of connect with people, much the same way that we've connected, mm-hmm. but also to kind of, from a school position of being able to tell your story. I mean, I don't know what the media is like in your neck of the woods, but you know, I don't want the local newspaper to be the one to define our program or to be the one that is the only you know, the only basis for forming an opinion of our school. I think that there's a lot of good things going on in our classrooms, and I look at my role as being kind of a cheerleader for that, or someone to kind of share that with others, so that people, be it parents, be it grandparents, be it just general public who's interested, has an idea of what's going on in this building. And so it's become more deliberate in the sense of, you know, there are certain events I want to know that I want to share. I try to share student artwork. I try to share kind of slice of life things, mm-hmm. just to kind of give an idea of what's going on here. And I've encouraged staff to do that. I'm real happy to say I've got 9 of my staff that are active on Twitter in the sense of doing that same type of thing, where they share moments and images from the classroom day, the school day. And, and the interesting thing is that, you know, there's an amplifying effect where basically if I take Miss Murphy's photo that she's put up on Twitter and I share that and I retweet that, well, that amplifies it. Then if my district picks it up, which they do, mm-hmm. then they amplify it. And now, even though she maybe have only 20 followers on her Twitter feed, because of the other folks who do follow on that amplification effect, she's able to kind of tell her story. And the interesting thing the teachers have mentioned is the feedback they get from, you know, be it other teachers around the world or interested adults and that type of thing. And I think when they share that information with students, it's pretty powerful in the sense of developing this idea of an audience.
Mm-hmm. And how does that express itself, that idea express itself in any way for your students? Do you encourage them to publish, or outside of just, you know, sharing the docs internally, do you give them some kind of role in that as well?
We've got a couple teachers that are playing with KidBlog, but it's mm-hmm. more internal. It's okay. The kind of stuff where they're sharing internally. We'll share, you know, musical performances and artwork and that type of thing, but it's not so much that we've got the students themselves doing that.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of feel that that's similar for us as well, you know, that we have class blogs, and we've had that for a number of years now, and we've certainly found that that's a very powerful home-school engagement technique, and also with, not just with the parents, but also with, like, the extended family as well, you know, grandparents or people who may be at a distance from the family directly. And I know that that's probably the most popular thing we do on the internet is our blogs. But we haven't really quite turned that over to the students to write yet. It's still very much staff that are writing that.
Yeah, I find it interesting, too, the number of – it seems like Instagram is very popular with a lot of students, even though they're not 13. Mm-hmm. But I can tell – and I see this from students who have left our school and gone on to what we call middle school here – you know, the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. Okay. A lot of kids who follow me because they know I post images about the school, and then, you know, they'll like the image. Mm-hmm. And that, even though I don't follow them specifically, that it is kind of a kind of barometer of looking of, you know, who's watching and who's seeing. And it is interesting in terms of the students. The other aspect of you know, Instagram, you know, when I started Instagram, it's just my account, you know, at Tim Lauer. Mm-hmm. But it was something that I didn't really I didn't do like at Lewis Elementary or something like that. Mm. And but that was more, it just kind of happened. And as you are probably aware, there are school pictures there. There's pictures of my granddaughter. There's pictures of me in the park. There's all kinds of stuff. And what I've realized with it is that for the students who follow, it's kind of a way to kind of share my life, for them to know who I am. You know, mm-hmm. And so in the aspect of, if I went to a basketball game on the weekend and I posted a picture about that on Monday morning, a student might say, "Hey, my mom said you went to the game because she follows you on Instagram," kind of thing. Okay. And it leads to conversations and discussions, and it kind of allows the kids to get an idea of it's, you know, because I don't know if you have this experience, but like if I go to the local grocery store and I run into kids, I just think it's the craziest thing that, you know, what are you doing here?
I can't believe you actually go to the shops and eat food and things like that.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah. No, it's interesting, the whole aspect of it's something we've often taken quite seriously, and we talk about it explicitly, is the idea that, you know, one of our school values is that teachers and pupils are not enemies to one another. And school can be so adversarial at times, particularly when you're dealing with older children, as you know, Cedars is when we're 5 to 18. It's one of the key values, it's particularly in the secondary school, that we're not enemies of each other and that we have normal relationships in the way that people do have normal relationships. And I think that's another powerful way, because I certainly know that, you know, students do follow me on Instagram, although I don't make much effort to follow them back. In fact, I don't make any effort to follow them back deliberately so.
Right.
But, you know, I know that they know that I, you know, go to rugby matches and, you know, travel and things, and they see where I am as well. That's another thing that's quite powerful for me, is when I'm traveling, that they get to sometimes see where I go. You know, they see pictures from South Africa or the US or wherever it is I am, and we can talk about it and share it later on.
No, I totally agree. I mean, that's this aspect of you know, it just shows you to be a person, and you have interests, and you have things that, you know, you have a family, and you have all these things. And I totally agree with what you said. It's a matter of, you know, showing the commonality that we all share.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. For a free trial and 10% off, visit squarespace.com/outofschool and enter the offer code PUPIL at checkout. A better web starts with your website. Now, Squarespace is one of these sites that you, of course, they sponsor so many podcasts, but just to mention that, you know, Bradley's site runs on Squarespace, Spears.org runs on Squarespace. I've been there for years. I took my site there from a previous WordPress blog, I think it was, and I've been on Squarespace for several generations now. I started with Squarespace 5 and then 6 and now version 7, and 7 is easily the best one we've ever used. It's scalable from just a regular blog like mine all the way through to big sites with e-commerce. I've had Spears.org for years and years, but with Squarespace 7, you can go to their site, start yourself a blog, and if you pay by the year, they'll throw in a free domain name. Take your pick of any domain you want, or any domain that's still available, which is usually the bigger problem these days. All plans include e-commerce, so if you go from your blog to wanting to sell t-shirts, Squarespace has got you covered. There's nothing to manage, nothing to host, nothing to set up. You just get in there and you go. And really, the iOS app now is very, very solid and a super reliable solution for posting images, posting text, setting up all the things you want, and getting it right onto your blog straight from a phone or from an iPad. That's Squarespace. Thanks to them for sponsoring the show. Let me ask you another question about parents, Tim. How do your parents approach technology use? How do they feel about it in the school? And do you have any kind of situations where parents are either dead against or they're not happy with the approach that you take to technology in school, or do you find it mostly supportive?
I'd say mostly supportive. I think you know, we try to share with our families what we're doing to get an idea so that we can you know, head some of that kind of thing off. I know that there are some schools in the area where there's a lot of discussion of screen time. And but I try to approach it in terms of we're doing work and we're accomplishing things here. It's just not a matter of I think, you know, interacting with technology in a digital form is a lot different than looking and staring at a television screen that just is a kind of a show that it's running. I mean, there's no interaction there. Whereas in this environment, you're more in control, and you are, you know, you be it editing a video or being, you know, recording something, writing something, searching for information, researching, those kinds of things. Those are more active kinds of pursuits. And I think I kind of stressed to my families and to students too that, you know, this is work, and that other stuff, yeah, I agree with you. I don't want kids mindlessly sitting and watching hours and hours of television. But I do see a distinction between the two types of environments. And folks have been pretty positive in terms of what we've been trying to accomplish and supportive. We've had several teachers in the States. They have this crowdfunding kind of thing called Donors Choose, which is geared towards schools. It allows teachers to put up projects and such and then solicit funds for those from people who are interested in donating. And so that gets back to what you mentioned a few minutes ago about, you know, be it relatives of students. We have a lot of grandparents who, hey, I'll help that class get 8 more Chromebooks. Here, I'll donate some money, that kind of thing. And so I think by kind of sharing that and telling that story, you're kind of garnering support. But I try to be transparent about what we're trying to do, and it's not a, it's, you know, when we start school in the fall, there's a letter that goes home about the Google Apps accounts and alerting them to the fact that we will be setting those up, and if there's something that is an issue, we want to, you know, hear about it from you, but it's not something that is that I had great trouble with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely feel like parents are different now than they have been, you know, maybe 5 or 10 years ago, where, you know, those parents were maybe not as familiar, you know, with technology, or they hadn't grown up with technology in the same way. But, you know, schools move on very quickly. And I feel like now, you know, particularly at your age and stage of education that you're working at, Tim, that the parents you're dealing with are probably much more tech savvy and much more familiar, you know, just the age they're at, the time when they were born and what technology mm-hmm. was like in their life. They are much more au fait with what happens with technology than, you know, even 10 years ago, the parents that you would have been dealing with then.
Oh, I would agree. I think the other aspect of this is, you know, the advent of the smartphone. That is where I'll see families that don't have a computer at home, but they all have smartphones. And or there's one PC or something at the house, but basically, you know, the personal devices. And then for families, I mean, being able to follow your child's classroom on Twitter and getting alerts and that type of thing, because you've got this thing in your pocket or your purse, that is, you know, I've had conversations with some schools. They talk about, well, we need to do a web page and we need to do all these things. And I said, well, you could, but I mean, you want to get started tomorrow, open up a Twitter account and start posting stuff about your school, and you know, your families are going to find that they're going to want that information. They like that timely information.
Yeah, and it's in such situations, there's not a lot of training for your staff, but there's also not a lot of training for your audience either. You know, they're probably already there,
right? You know? Right.
And we've had this discussion recently about, you know, should we set up a Facebook page for the school? And increasingly, I'm thinking, you know, we've probably missed the boat in setting up a Facebook page. You know, we'd maybe be much better off just starting up Instagram or something.
You got a lot of grandparents on Facebook, Bill.
That is true. Yeah, you got to know your demographics there, don't you? Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you just a couple more questions, Tim. I'm aware you're sure. at work, so I don't want to take too much of your time. But learning spaces. You know, one of the features of your Instagram feed, I think, those slices of life that you share from the school, is the students out of the classroom and also with their Chromebook in hand. It's something that, you know, is common. I certainly see it in iPad schools where the iPad goes around the place, but sometimes people might think that a Chromebook, a laptop form factor, has to kind of stay in the classroom and be used on a desk and so on. And I don't think that's the way it seems at Lewis.
No, it's you'll see quite a bit of if you walk down the hallway right now, you probably walk by the fourth and fifth grade classrooms. You'll see kids out in the hall. We have, you know, we're a school that was built in the mid-50s. So we're, you know, it's hallways with rooms on either side. So we're not like an open concept or anything like that. But we've tried to take the spaces where it makes sense. We've put a lot of benches around the building to kind of where the hallways kind of connect to make kind of common areas. So you'll see kids out in the hallway. You'll walk into a classroom, you'll see kids on the floor up against a wall. We've got a pretty good Wi-Fi coverage. So we've got some garden spaces that are adjacent to classrooms. You'll find kids working out in those spaces. And they do, I mean, again, because the Chromebook environment, I mean, you basically close the lid, you walk down the hall, you open the lid, within, you know, 8 or 10 seconds, it's back up and running and connected. You know, we've had older Macs and PCs that, you know, would take, you know, 2 minutes to boot, you know, that kind of stuff. And so the Chrome environment, in the sense of it's not quite like having a tablet or an iPad, but it's pretty quick. And you can get up and going relatively quickly.
That's great, yeah. And has that come online since the technology came along, or has your school always kind of had that culture of, you know, learning beyond the walls of the classroom?
I think the culture has been here. I think the technology just makes it, you know, it just kind of compounds it, I guess, in the sense that it just makes it a lot easier. But we have had an environment. We've had garden spaces for a number of years. We have, you know, we put benches out in the hallways simply because we wanted to encourage students and teachers to kind of spill out into the hallway, not just be confined to a classroom. But the technology, though, I mean, for myself, being able to get out of my office, take my laptop with me, walk into a classroom, and sit in the back corner and observe and connect with kids and what the teacher's doing, but also, you know, keep up with any of the minutiae from my administrative work that I have to do. That's been really nice in the sense, and you know, the robust, we have a pretty good wireless system, and that makes it really nice too. But it's, yeah, I think the portability of the technology just gives teachers and students more options in terms of how they design their classroom space and how they utilize that space.
That's great. Well, Tim, that's kind of the end of my questions there. We prepared a few things to talk about already, but is there anything you want to finish off with? Do you have any kind of message or anything that you would encourage other people in your position or people who want to get to that kind of situation in their school? How would you suggest that they go forward?
Yeah, I think it's real important that school administrators take a lead, school leaders take a lead in this and not just rely on the IT departments or a couple of interested staff members. I look at the access to the technology as being a pretty big equity issue in terms of giving students every possibility to succeed in their educational environment. And I try to work with other administrators who maybe are just kind of stepping into this work, and I try to kind of say what can you start with today? Well, I think Twitter has lots of interesting uses. I'm not a big chat person on Twitter, but I think the aspect of following smart people, following someone like yourself, I'm able to learn from you because basically you're sharing information. I can go to different leaders across the country or across the world, different educators and different political people. It's just a way that allows you to kind of if I think back to when I was first starting to teach, the way that avenues for access to information were basically the local media, some of the national media, but it was all kind of centrally driven and top down. And now the technology really affords you the opportunity to kind of connect with people from anywhere who basically share that interest, I'll find people that, hey, that is one smart lady. I'm going to follow her on Twitter because I'm going to be able to learn from her. So I think that's where I try to encourage my colleagues to kind of look at that and realize that, it's not just about posting what you had for breakfast, but you can tell a story in 140 characters. You can kind of, I'm real excited this year to see my teachers jump onto Twitter. And at the end of the day, I've got a list and I can just kind of browse through and see, or even see as the day is going on, what's been going on in those rooms. And it just informs me as I walk around my building and such. So I just encourage folks to kind of look at that. The other aspect of this is, with the technology, the cost is always going to be something that you have to consider. And I think the Google Apps environment is something that really allows, the technology itself, it can be relatively inexpensive, but also the back end part of it, the management piece, it really is a lot, so much easier. We've had machine breaks or it gets dropped or something like that. And you just pull another one off the shelf because you just need to have your login and all your stuff's there. And that, I had a student run down to me. I was in the cafeteria getting ready for lunch, and he was a fifth grade student and he had watery eyes. He was very upset, and he thought he had lost an hour's worth of work because one of his classmates was kind of pranking him, right? And I said, hey, go get your Chromebook, settle down. And, we learned all about revision history, it was like, oh, wow. And then he felt so much better. It was great. It was really interesting to see. But, I just think that that aspect of something you said in a previous episode of your podcast about the one-to-one environment not so much the device, but actually having the environment and then determining which device it is, but being able to provide students with something, right? And then going and working. But there's a lot of discussion, iOS, Google, people argue about these types of things. And To me, it's not so much that as what can my kids afford? What can we get them? And then finding an environment that will scale for that. I mean, what's nice about our environment, we used to run it ourselves. Our district has since moved to the Google environment. And, you've got 48,000 students that have access to this now that, and I just think of the ways that we used to do things with pen drives and with shared files and that never, everything, it was a lot of work. And this just seems a lot easier now.
Yeah, and to think of, the cost, not just in terms of software licensing, but also staff costs as well, in terms of what it would have taken to run a service like that. You would never have been able to afford that kind of staffing level or skill base or even the licenses within one individual school. But now, you just go to a web page, you sign up for that, and, you're up and running.
Right. And then another aspect that I find really interesting is the community that's developed up around some of the add-ons or the extensions. And the folks out of, I think, New Visions for Learning out of New York, who things like Doc Appender and different little tools that really extend the basic functionality of things like spreadsheets and documents and forms and such. That, to me, is pretty exciting, that community, too.
Yeah, I was actually just experimenting with, Doctopus and Gubrick and some of those add-ons for Google Apps. And we're going to be talking about them a little bit on the next show, week as well. So I get my thinking cap on and try and figure out what goes on there. But also Google Classroom as well is obviously interesting. It's come along kind of alongside iTunes U, and we've started experimenting with, I wouldn't say any teachers actually making heavy use of Google Classroom yet, but I've started now that there's an iOS app as well, but despite us being a fully iOS school at the kind of coalface, if you like, our back end has been Google Apps for years now, nearly 10 years. And it's interesting to see how we can start to integrate both parts of that together.
Right. I mean, I have an iPad. I use it all the time. And I really am impressed with, it's gotten so much better in terms of the Google integration. The Google has done a really nice job with some of their apps. And Classroom looks really interesting. It seems to be changing every week in terms of they keep adding features and functionality that people request, and it's going to be interesting to follow that.
Yeah, I think it's there's a lot of opportunity there with Google Classroom. And one of the things I was concerned about was, do I have to assume that every piece of work the students do is going to be a Google Doc in order to adopt that? Or can I, can they give me something from iMovie? Can they give me something from Kino or GarageBand or whatever? And as far as I can see so far, it seems quite capable of integrating both stuff that originated on iOS and things that originated in the Drive world and bringing that all together for a teacher. So I'm quite optimistic about trying some more of that.
Good.
Yeah. Well, Tim, listen, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I want to let you get back to your school and your walk around and everything. But thank you for taking the time and sharing your thoughts about leadership, your thoughts about education, and your experience with technology at Lewis.
I enjoyed it. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Fraser.